Good evening, everyone. Welcome to People's Internet Radio, broadcasting out of the Celtic land of Ireland, and me, Graham Hart, hosting from the Celtic land of Cornwall. Welcome to the show. Today's date is Tuesday, the 30th of June, 2015, and my guest this evening is Dr. Patrick Quanton, MD. Now, Patrick has been in the medical profession, and he's moved out, and I'm really looking forward to talking to this guy, and we're going to speak to him right after... I think this seems very suitable. Anyway, here we are, peoplesinternetradio.com, where we are seeking solutions. And tonight I'm hoping we can find a few more with my very special guest, Dr. Patrick Quanton, MD. Good evening, Patrick. Are you there?
I'm here. I can hear you very clearly. Thank you.
Good. You're bouncing in here, my friend. Patrick, you're someone who I've wanted to meet for a long time.
Really?
Yes. Because I get more than 10 minutes with you, I get 2 hours and ask you all the questions that I've always wanted to ask. That my
you can ask questions, but whether you get answers, that's a different matter.
Well, let's start, Patrick, with where... Okay. Let's go right back from the start. What made you want to be a doctor in the first place?
Oh, I think that was just the wish to be able to help people, you know, and of course that's a very wide sort of concept. You can help people in lots of many ways, but since my own health as a baby and child was very, very poor.
Really?
Yeah, so I think having lots of doctors over the in the house and many hospital visits and so on, I think it was just my way of saying, you know, this is the way to help people.
Brilliant.
So that's the it goes way back. I mean, my mother tells a story that when I was 5 years old, and she paid the doctor for a home visit. After he left, I told her that was what I was wanted to be.
Right back from when you were 5 years old?
Yeah, and I think it was the money exchange that did it.
Yeah. So, you, how long did it take to train?
Well, things have changed, obviously, but in my days, and I trained in Belgium, so we had 7 years training to become a GP. That included your hospital training and so on. In Belgium in those days, you weren't allowed to practice until you'd completed 7 years of training.
Yeah, so it's a fair amount of time.
It's when you're in the middle of it, to me, it certainly felt as an enormous amount of time. Because time is passing by, you're getting older, and around you, your college friends, you know, friends you were at school with, they get married, they've got jobs, they earn money, and you're still sniffing around old books.
You know? Sure, yeah. So from that point, so from the point of when did you actually qualify?
1983.
And how many years was it before you said things aren't right?
Well, that's a gradual process, isn't it? But I would say that really the first conscious thoughts about that arose within, let's say, 7-8 years.
Okay.
of practicing.
Right.
You know, it was my circumstances were a bit unique in the sense that I was practicing on Alderney, one of the Channel Islands.
Yes.
Very small island. And it was a personal choice I picked the place, you know. I thought, oh, maybe, yeah, that's a good place. That's where I want to be. With the idea that I could would be involved in the community and that I would get to know people, you know,
yeah,
and what they're doing and how they function and so on. And that actually happened. A small community, and so you, as a GP in those days, you were always on call. You know, if you were on the island, people would find you.
Right.
We didn't need cell phones and all that stuff. People would know where you were and they would come and get you. So that was one aspect. The other aspect was that it was private practice. So people paid for their services. And that immediately opens the whole thing that you have to be aware of how costly things become for people. And for me, that was an awareness or a growing awareness as to, come on, if people are paying that kind of money, you need to be efficient.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if you get a gardener in and you pay him, you want him to do the job properly. So every time things weren't really working very well, I would hear about it. Either people would come back and tell me about it, but more often than not, when they saw you in the street or in the pub or in the shop or whatever, they would go, hey, you there, you know, those stupid tablets you gave me last Tuesday. You know, I threw them in the, I flushed them down the toilet because they made me sick, you know, and you went, that's not in what my book says. You know, they're not supposed to do that. And that's really how it all started, questioning what I was doing and what, well, in those days, it wasn't so much what I had learned because I didn't know that there was anything wrong with what I had learned.
Sure.
But I was questioning, you know, the effects of what I was seeing.
Yeah. And how long then, so this transformation, if you like, came over an 8-year period?
Yeah, well, that was the sort of beginning of getting to realize that it wasn't all as we were taught and it wasn't all as it was written down in the books.
Sure.
And so Small Island still had that that idea that I wanted to help people. And so if then treatments weren't working, then I thought, well, okay, you know, I'm only a GP. I don't know much. I need to get some help in. And we had access to specialists on the island of Guernsey, which was really the main island of the bailiwick.
Right, yeah.
And so we would send people there to a specialist or... I mean, I organized monthly clinics from various specialities and got the guys to come over to Alderney for the day and see the people there rather than sending, you know, 10 people across on a plane to Alderney over space of a month or whatever. He would see 10 people on Alderney. And the idea was, well... the things that I don't know, they will know.
Right.
And then gradually you start to notice that it isn't working either because you don't get the answers that you want. You get answers like, they're just not taking their tablets or it's all in his head. You know, he's depressed.
Yes, I've had that one.
And... I would go, no, I know this guy. No, he's not that kind of time. That's not what the problem is. So eventually you start thinking, well, you know, these clever specialist guys, they don't seem to know very much more than we do or that I can find in books or whatever. And then the search really truly begins to other ways, you know. What else is there? And it's amazing how that happens. You know, when you're ready for that, people come in and they'll give you things. You know, they print off articles or they bring you a book or a magazine and they go, have you seen this? Do you think that might be something for me?
Okay.
So I started reading all that stuff. Then I started finding people that would do different kinds of therapies. And over the years, I think I ran through them all, you know, got people to come over to Alderney, do clinics, do weekends, introduce me to techniques. We did that over, let's say, a period of about 10 years or so.
And this is while you were still practicing?
While I was still practicing, and gradually getting to know a wide variety of stuff that apparently, you know, was good for whatever. And my idea was, well, this can only be positive, because if my tablets aren't working and I've got five or six, you know, different other therapies that will help with this, then we'll integrate them. And if you integrate the alternative therapies within the healthcare, at least the first line healthcare sector, then surely everybody will benefit from that. And that didn't work. I tried integration of alternative therapies, and eventually, when I learned more about, you know, how life really works, or how more about, I'm not saying that I know how life works, but know a bit more about how it works and how illness occurs and what health is, I had to come to the conclusion that the two can never be integrated, that the thinking, the theory and the philosophy of the Western medical system is directly opposed to the thinking of many alternative therapies.
And even more so these days.
Yeah, it's people are becoming more and more aware of it because there is a growing trend of using them, and people start to realize, start to get it. You know, you can't integrate these things. Well, so I had to make a choice too,
right?
And well, that's what I did. Yeah.
So you decided, that's it, I'm out of here.
Yes, completely. For me, it was burn all the bridges. Don't have this idea that well, you need an income, or maybe you can do some locum work or whatever, because by that time my people around me had calculated that if I stopped or gave away my own practice, I only needed to go and do 5 months of locum work in a year, and I would earn more than what I would earn when I was in full-time practice on Alderney.
Good grief.
So I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be bothered with that dilemma. To me, it was a choice on knowledge. That's how it felt to me. And so I chose not to have anything to do with the medical system anymore. So I got rid of my practice, and I asked the authorities to remove my name from the list of practicing doctors in the UK.
And how did you, I got to say that when I go to the doctors these days, which is still too frequent because I'm a drug addict, and I've said this on air before, I'm hooked on prescription drugs. And mm-hmm. I've been for a long time. But when you go in there now and see a doctor and say, well, you know, what's the matter? Whatever it is, I've got a sore elbow. They would probably take, I noticed that the younger they are, they take a book off the shelf and look under E.
Yeah.
And find out what this wrong says of the elbow and what the prescribed pill is and give it to you. And you go, well, you know, I could do that. My granddaughter could do that.
Yeah.
And it's all about pills and more pills.
Yes, in a way, with the coming of age of computers, this really has escalated very rapidly, because although the medical profession is still pretending that they are thinking human beings, and that doctors are free to make a diagnosis and what have you, the truth really is that everything is restricted through protocols and computer programs. So they now really they give in the symptoms, if you like. They give in the blood results and the results of the MRI or whatever it is. And there you've got it, your most likely diagnosis. And that is what the doctor has to go by. If he doesn't, and the patient complains because something goes wrong, or, you know, he won't be covered by the authorities. They will drop him like a brick because he hasn't followed the protocol.
Right.
So it is literally, you don't, that is also why 7-minute consultations work perfectly, because not that you can, that you get to know somebody in 7 minutes, no, but you know what the complaints are, you press a few buttons, and you know which road to take. It tells you.
Yeah.
Now, it's a shame, because as you say, you could do that, you know, give me the computer program.
Absolutely.
And I'll do it. And effectively, a lot of people today are doing just that.
Yes.
They're Googling, you know, they're Googling all kinds of things, including symptoms and words and diagnoses, you know, and then they go, oh, look at that. I've got that.
Yeah. You
know, maybe I've got this disease. Fancy name. Good. Now I know what's wrong with me. Fine. If you feel better about it, that's okay with me.
Yeah.
The point is, are you actually getting any better?
Well, I'm not, that's for sure.
Well, keep going back. They'll have lots more to prescribe.
Exactly. That's the problem. I mean, people don't realize you go down the chemist and pick up my monthly supply, and there's a queue there. You think, my God, all these people are drug addicts. They don't realize they are.
Yeah, the chemist, of course, is a legalized drug dealer.
Of course.
Yeah, and if that is the case, I have nothing against that. But at least, why not call a spade a spade? In America, a chemist is called a drug store.
Yes. Yes.
Well, now I know what they're selling.
Yes. So you decided to say, well, I'm out of this. You obviously, I would have thought, had a lot of discussion with your colleagues.
About
saying, this is it. This is not working for me, and I think I need to be approaching medicine from a different way.
No. Although I was living on a small island of Alderney, tucked away, you know, in the ocean, I'd already become a bit of a pain to the authorities, I think.
I like those people.
in the last few years, I got several times I got my knuckles wrapped because I wasn't prescribing enough.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I mean, there's, and the argument was that I was putting my patients at risk. The questioned on, you know, okay, are more of my patients in hospital? No. Are more of my patients dying? No. Has any of my patients complained? No. What makes you think I'm putting my patients at risk? Well, you're not prescribing enough cortisone. You're not prescribing enough blood pressure tablets. You're not prescribing enough antibiotics. I said, but you have no evidence that my patients are more ill or longer ill or more frequently ill than anybody else's. No. This went on for about 3 years. So I'd already become a bit of a pain to them. I didn't have any lengthy discussion with anybody. You know, for me, the truth is that the decision was made in one evening.
Right.
The last year was sharing my practice with another GP. He'd come over and we discussed him taking over the practice. Because I wanted to get out of it, and he was interested in coming to live in Alderney. So for a year we worked together, And that was fine. You know, he would do most of the on calls, and I would do some clinics, but I would also do, let's call it for argument's sake, an alternative clinic where I would see people that wanted to, you know, have a little bit of a different approach to things. And then he went on holiday, and he went away for his summer holiday for 3 weeks. And so I was back on call all the time, and I was dealing with everything in a Western type medicine fashion.
Yeah.
And I started to get panic attacks. I started sweating. I woke up in the middle of the night thinking, did I write that person that prescription, or didn't I? Did I give him something else? That would be wrong. Oh God, I hope I haven't done that. I was panicking all over the shop.
Good.
Because while I was doing consultations, I would have to think about what I needed to prescribe. And at the same time, I was thinking how I could help this person. And that would be totally different. And so I got very confused. So he came back. That evening, when he came into the surgery, I said, look, I said, I can't do this anymore. I've got to stop. And I would appreciate it if you would take over, and I would go home now, and I would never come back. And that's what I did.
Amazing.
I went home, and I never stepped through that door again.
Good grief.
Yeah, just left it.
I'm getting hustled in the chat room here by Patrick. It's Jason. Sorry, I got a Patrick in here as well. Why is it called a practice, Patrick?
Why is it called a practice?
Yeah,
that's a good question. I think it maybe has something to do with the fact that doctors are performing.
Yeah,
they are. Traditionally, it's known as the art of medicine.
Yeah,
and so you are practicing the art of medicine. Now, I'm sorry to say, but in my opinion, there's very little art left in medicine. It's all protocols and rules and regulations. And if you don't behave, they'll throw you to the lions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've had so many run-ins with my doctor. I had a triple bypass 5
right.
years ago, and when I started to look into things, I wouldn't take the statins.
Right. Yeah.
So I said, right, they're a goner. Blood pressure tablets. I think I got rid of those as well. Not that it made any difference. I just didn't want to get hooked up on more pills, you know, because I'm already taking, I'm taking. Up to two nitrazepam a night, sleepers, and I do.
Mm-hmm.
And if I try to cut back, then it's really difficult. An antidepressant.
Right.
And I have to take painkillers because I got very sore joints.
Right.
A groin problem in knees. But, you know, my biggest problem I have is tiredness, which is probably coming from the drugs anyway.
They're contributing severely to that.
Yeah.
It's always the case. Because tiredness is really an imbalance in your energy system, an imbalance between the amount of energy that you're able to produce and push around your system and the amount of energy that you burn.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. So if you're permanently tired, that means that, relatively speaking, you are permanently burning too much energy compared to the energy that you produce.
Right.
So in order to, first of all, how do you do that? Well, there can be lots of different reasons for it, but one of the reasons where people lose energy is in making your system safe from the inside, which means that anything that is toxic, any waste products, all of that need to quickly be dealt with. And I'm afraid to say that every medication that we're using is a toxic product.
Right.
So you already are burning a lot of energy into just getting rid of that, neutralizing that, making sure that you don't actually poison yourself too quickly.
Okay.
And that is where a lot of your energy already goes. There are lots of other things, of course, where we burn energy constantly. So it's not the only reason, but it certainly is a contributing factor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I've always felt, I think you follow your heart, that it really is a question of the tablets need to go, but it's not that easy. I mean, I don't mind sweating it out. I don't mind cold turkeying for a while. I did come off the sleeping tablets many years back. These aren't working anymore. And I just cold turkeyed straight off them, two a day. And I did that for 2 years. During that 2 years, my driving was appalling. My nerves were shot. I used to sleep so little at night. I would lay awake on the bed for like 8 hours. I mean, the amount of sleep I was getting was ridiculous, to the point where I had to go and borrow, inverted commas, half a sleeping tablet every now and then off my mother, who was on them, just to get a decent night's sleep. And in the end, I just gave up and went back to them. Because I couldn't beat them, Patrick. It was...
Well, it's a big problem for people, you know, not just sleeping tablets. Because, I mean, that in itself is interesting enough, because we started off with Valium, which cured everything.
Yeah.
You know, and then it became a huge problem. And so the medical profession said, you know, we'll never do this again. Well, I'm sorry to say, you know, they're still doing sleeping tablets, they're still doing antidepressants, they're still doing cortisone, you know, all of which people can't get rid of. But there's some interesting points here. One is that it doesn't matter what medication that we're talking about. If you're looking at it in the long term, from the medium long term to the very long term, you see that all the medication becomes less and less active.
Yeah.
You don't get the same effects anymore a while. That may be a short while, but certainly after a longer period of time.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is for all medication. So the system obviously is getting used to it, as people say.
Yes.
Now, I would like to slip in here. That is exactly the same. It's exactly the same problem with your supplements. People eating a lot of supplements these days and don't realize that once they've done that for, say, 2 or 3 months, you know, it's probably just going into the waste bin inside their system.
Yeah.
They're getting used to it. The system adjusts. And what does an adjustment mean? It means that if the two adjustments, if you're taking medication that is supposedly supporting your system, as in just one example, you know, you're taking thyroid tablets.
Yeah.
Because your thyroid is underactive, so it needs a bit more activity. So, you know, you take some extra thyroid hormone. The medication to support your system, you get a higher blood level going through your system, and the feedback to the gland is, oh, there is already enough in the blood, so stop production or make less of it.
Right.
Which means that after a while, the support that you're giving to your system is not enough anymore.
No.
If these people then try to get rid of that supporting medication, they'll fail miserably.
Yeah.
They can't hack it because the system has been told that it was okay, even if it didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you want it to change. No, you need to retrain the whole system. The other medication, the suppressive medication, what are you suppressing? Well, whatever it is that you're trying to suppress, How has that occurred in the first place? It is a natural reaction from your system. In other words, if your system is having too much of something and it produces that all by itself, that must be, there must be a reason for it. And generally speaking, we could say the reason is that the system obviously needs it that way. It needs it to be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
If you then go and suppress this over a long period of time, the system inside will try and get over that suppressing element. It will actually try and lift it up again. Why? Because you need it.
Yeah.
You need it to be higher than what you allow it to be. So you get a massive buildup of pressure underneath this lid, if you like.
Yeah.
If then these people are trying to get rid of the medication, they take the lid off the cooking pot, and your dish ends up on the ceiling. There's so much steam, so much pressure underneath it that you can't hack it.
Hmm.
So this is the big problem. It's all very nice to want to change and to want to get rid of your medication. I hear that an awful lot these days. But if you really truthfully want to be successful in that, then you have a lot of work ahead of you. And you need to be guided very carefully as to how you can prepare your system, support it where it needs supporting, and calming it down where it needs calming down, so that you get a better natural balance, and then you go through the cold turkey stage.
Okay.
You need to first look for a better natural balance. Otherwise, you're never going to hack it.
How do you find that, Patrick?
This is the problem. You don't find that within the Western medical system.
Right.
It's no use. It's no use having a second or a third or a fourth opinion. You'll hear the same things all over again.
Yeah.
No, you need to have a completely different approach to life and to your health. And then you end up with the true meaning of holistic. Yeah, holistic is a term that alternative therapists like to use a lot. And a lot of various therapies are deemed to be holistic because they're good for everything. You know, sorry, that's my definition. It's not an official one.
We don't do official here on People's Internet Radio.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. So, you know, it's holistic means that you're actually approaching the system as a whole, and that you're looking at various input roads into the system. It's not just about one type. Yeah, it's a holistic approach. Is you're never going to get a holistic approach by just using one method.
Okay.
It may be that you can use that method for an awful lot of things, but in order to balance or allow a system to find a easier, a better balance, it would be good if you could support it in a variety of ways.
Right.
And best would be to look at that as natural ways. In other words, you need to learn why a system is doing what it's doing, instead of immediately saying, oh, that hurts, so that can't be right.
Sure. Well, I'm at the point where I'm taking all these pills. First, just one point on the sleeping tablet. For anyone who's, and I hope people haven't taken them, but anyone who's taken nitrazepam, if you take a half a sleeping tablet nitrazepam, it'll knock you out.
Yeah.
You'll wake up feeling, you know, so drowsy is untrue. Yeah. But you soon build up a resistance to it, and before you know it, you're balancing around at two, and I'll take 1.5 tonight, and so tomorrow when I take two, then I'll probably get a big enough kick to put me to sleep.
Yeah, this is the other problem, of course, with and you can widen that to a lot of complaints. If you have a complaint and you use a drug to reduce that complaint and it works, right? To start with, you get a good effect.
Yes.
As you say, you know, you take half an itrazepam and you're knocked out.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Right? So you keep doing that.
Sure.
And then you go through a spell for whatever reason, not important, you go through a spell where you don't sleep very well, or in general terms, your complaint starts to come back again.
Exactly.
The natural way to think about it is, oh, this worked the last time. Maybe if I double the dose or take a little bit more, it will work again.
Yeah.
And very often it does, for a little while. And that little while is a shorter little while than the first little while.
It's so
and
true.
And so you end up... So the drug addiction that we see on prescribed drugs, and I don't mean the recognized drug addiction that we see on prescribed drugs. I mean people that really can't do without their cortisone, without their anti-inflammatories anymore, without their blood pressure tablets and so on and so forth. That kind of addiction is not, it's exactly the same as it would be with cannabis or marijuana or heroin or all the same stuff. It's looking for a particular effect, finding that, and after a while that effect is getting less and less, so you up the dose or you go to a stronger one, just as your doctor does. Oh, this blood pressure tablet is apparently not working anymore. You know, your blood pressure keeps rising. Tell you what, we'll give you a different one.
Yeah.
Or even better, keep to this one. I know it isn't working anymore, but stick with it. I'll give you another one to add to it.
Yes. Yes. As Lee has put in the chat room, the person who takes medicine must recover twice, once from the disease and once from the medicine. William Osler, MD.
Yes. And recovering from the disease is the easy bit.
Yes.
Yes. Very easy. It's very easy. Compared with getting rid of the drugs, it's very easy. The disease itself is not that difficult to recover from. And what is even more important is that if we were educated properly about disease and health, and if that was not in any way, shape, or form, a commercial enterprise, my health.
Yeah.
If that wasn't a commercial enterprise, and we were educating children properly on health and disease, then all the diseases that cost so many lives, so much misery, and so much money,
yes,
would now be a rarity.
Yeah.
We would only have to deal with most of it. Yeah. Not saying that you get rid of it all, but you can get rid of 80 to 90% by educating people and telling them exactly what, where disease comes from and what health is really, truly about.
Right. So what's, I must ask you, Patrick, about distilled water.
Yes.
What are the benefits, or are there, or in your opinion, are there any benefits from distilled water?
I think that you could die from that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Anyone want to buy a distiller?
In the late 90s, I think I wrote an article. I think I called it "Does Water Cause Cancer?" And this is the type of water that certainly isn't good for you.
Wow.
The type of water that brings you to life is the water that runs from the hills and from the mountains.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's that water that is full of life and oxygen. And the fact that maybe there are a few bacteria in there, or maybe, you know, there are a few dead leaves or whatever, that's not important.
Excellent. So this old theory, or excuse me, this old theory of distilled water is a waste of time.
It is a complete waste of time.
Okay, so if anyone out there wants to buy a distiller, I've got one going cheap. because I've tried everything, you know, and up the road, just when I, up the road here, about 200 yards, we have got a spring. And right. We don't even know its source. No one knows its source, but the water tastes beautiful. Yeah. But I must, I confess that I was prepared to try anything, and I invested in a distiller about a month ago.
Right.
So we won't be. No, I don't think we'll be distilling tonight.
Yeah, and the reason is very simple.
And can I have my money back?
Yeah. But you know, water is a medium that that adjusts to its environment very quickly. It takes up messages from its environment very quickly. It loses them very quickly too, but it takes messages very quickly. And what we've got with distilled water is what they do with that is basically they make sure that there is no life in that water.
Well, that's it, Patrick. That's just.
And we are human beings. You know,
yeah.
If you were, well, these are experiments that have been done. Yeah, you can find them on the internet and so on. Just do the experiment. Two identical plants. One you water with distilled water, and the other one you water with rainwater. Yeah, and do that for a few months and look at the difference.
Well,
one is dying.
Yeah,
and it's not the rainwater one.
No, it's me.
Yeah, and. Or another one, people that have cats, and I'm talking about free-running cats, right?
Yes.
Cats that go out and that live out. You can put a bowl of water down for them from the tap or distilled water or whatever, from a bottle, right? You could put that down. They'll never drink it.
That's very never. Interesting.
A free cat will never drink that distilled water. It will wait until it rains and it goes and slubber on the puddles.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
A dog will drink the distilled water. Why? Because dog is much more stupid than a cat. We have looked after dogs for a lot longer than we have cats.
Okay.
And the dog will know by, you know, education that that is the only water he's going to get. But if you take dogs for a walk, and particularly, you know, autumn time and whatever, you and the woods and it's rained and the puddles and whatever, you, that's where he's going to drink.
Every time, Patrick.
Every time.
Every time. Yeah. We did bring home spring water, and the dog loved it and we loved it. And then I heard about, well, you try anything, don't you? I mean, if this stuff is put out there, you'll try it.
Yeah.
The same with I got a juicer in as well. And I tried juicing, and that didn't seem to make any difference either.
No. So the whole point is about how alive is what I'm taking.
Yes.
Whether it's water or anything else, my food, how alive is it?
Right.
That is really, really important, because those are the messages that we're putting inside our system. Right. And I mean, the authorities know, you know. Don't these are simple things, and they know, and there are good reasons, commercial reasons, why they have collected all the food and control it. You know, from milk, cow's milk. You know, you're not allowed to sell
non-pasteurized.
Unpasteurized, that's the word, unpasteurized cow's milk. And the reasons go back in time, you know, history. Oh, it spreads TB. Well, no, it doesn't. And even if you believe that, why is goat's milk not regulated in the same way?
Yes, of course.
No other milk is regulated in the same way as cow's milk. Why? Because 97% of the market is cow's milk.
Right, yes.
It's not about your health. You know, if you had, if you've got goats or your neighbor has got goats, he can do whatever he likes with it. Nobody cares. Nobody comes and checks on it.
Right.
Why? Because it's not dangerous. Not dangerous at all. But it means, oh, now to protect the population, we need to collect all that. We need to administer this particular process, and now you get your milk back. Yes, and now it's indigestible.
Right.
So, but that's good too, you know, because within 5 years, you see a massive rise in numbers of cow milk allergies.
Okay.
So, that sells good medication. Two, that opens the market for a new product.
Yeah.
What have they done? They've gone to the East and they brought soya milk with them. They produced it on massive scale and people started to drink soya milk. Now, we're not made to drink those amounts of soy milk. We're not.
Right.
It's poisonous.
Okay.
Not in itself, but the amount of products that we now consume is poisonous.
Okay, well, I got a question in the I've got a point being made in the chat room. Laurie says, I have a distiller. I use the water to cook with and make colonial silver. I drink water from the tap. It's clean. And she also says rainwater is distilled.
In a way, yes. But the
but
point
she also
here...
says, Patrick, that flowers last longer in distilled, in my opinion.
Yeah, wait a minute. You got to be careful because what she does with the distilled water afterwards, that is the energy that the water will take to the plant or the person. So when she cooks with it, she brings it alive. When you make tea with that, you bring it alive. When you put some lemon juice in it, you bring it alive. And then it doesn't really matter anymore where your water comes from.
Okay, so if I'm using the distiller, but why distill it in the first place, Patrick?
Why distill it in the first place?
Yeah. Especially if you've got access to spring water like I have.
Yes.
And that's interesting because
can just use the tap water.
Yeah.
Because the tap water is dead too.
Right. That's very interesting. Because I'm not just using the water just to drink the pure water. I use it because I just find it, if you drink too much, it's just awful. But I use it to, we've been using it to cook in, and we've also been using it to drink with, you know, tea, coffee, etc.
Yeah.
But you're still missing the minerals from the water, are you not?
All the ingredients all the details, where all the attention goes to in the Western world is the minor details. The differences to the system, the feeding system, are minimal. You know, where the water comes from and what the actual content is, does have an effect, that's true, but the effect is not that great. Think about the the healing wells. You know, all over the country, and not just this country, all over the world, there are wells where local people say, this is healing spring water, or this is healing water.
Yeah.
A lot of these wells, a lot of this water has got heavy metals in it, has got a very distinct taste, not always very nice, but it does seem to heal people. And particularly people that come from elsewhere and then use the water. What is so good about the water? It doesn't matter what minerals are in there, you know, or what metals are in there, or that doesn't matter. The fact that it's different from what they have all the time gives an alternative message to your system, and the system wakes up and starts to clean up. So people from one area drinking a particular water all the time, if they then go, say, on holiday or whatever, and they come across some healing water springs or whatever, then that's a good idea to get a bottle, fill up a bottle, and drink that for a week or so.
Yeah.
Just to stimulate your system to clean out. So you can't say then, if you start comparing wells and springs, you can't say, oh, this water is more healing than that water. They all are. And
because
those
they're giving
particular
you...
those particular effects you see, especially from with water that comes from deep in inside the earth,
right?
And that brings a totally different energy to the water that comes to the surface. That is different from the surface water, which is where most of our drinking water comes from.
Excellent. Well, that's really put the dampers on the distilled water for me anyway, which I'm fine because, you know, I take this stuff and bought a distiller because I wanted to improve my health.
Yeah.
And we're, I think it must be about a month now, and I don't feel any better. In fact, I think I probably feel worse.
Yeah, I think you would do well just to make sure that you put some life into the water that you drink.
Right, right. Well, I should certainly be back on the spring water tomorrow, that's for sure. We won't have that bloody distiller going during the night neither, which is probably driving the dog mad. It's like a it's like a factory in there.
Oh dear.
I'm just trying to get a few points off my mind that that I wanted to ask about, Patrick, before we move into your particular field, so to speak. Chemtrails.
Yeah.
How do you think they're affecting our health? Have you got an opinion on that?
Yeah. I wish I could shoot some buggers down that to cause the whole problem.
Yeah, me too.
It's okay. My opinion are actually questions.
Yes.
You know, isn't it about time you tell me what you're doing up there? Oh, we're doing nothing. No. What am I looking at then?
Mm.
Oh, it's nothing. You know, it's just water vapor. Really? Water vapor that all of a sudden starts to block out the sun rays.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry, I've never seen that in my life before. Yeah?
Yeah.
And it is so obvious, and still there is a complete denial. Now, I don't know, and okay, there's speculation and whatever what it is and what it's supposed to do and all that, fine. But the fact that something seems to be put in the upper layers of the atmosphere is certainly going to affect the sun rays and the effect of the sun rays on the surface of the earth.
Right.
There is no doubt about that.
Because we need that energy.
It changes the energy, exactly. And if we then see, you know, well, climate change, I'm not going to say the warming up of the earth because I'm not convinced that it is that. I think we're just shifting heat around. And then I'm saying, well, okay, in the whole of my life, if I leave out the last 5, 6, 7 years, all my life before that, I can remember one extreme summer. One. Where it was absolute heat wave for about a week or so.
When was that?
I remember it because it was during my study, and I was sitting in a darkened room to keep the sun rays out, with my feet in an ice bucket. and now, it's, you know, heat waves twice in the summer and once in the spring.
Yes, it's awful.
Something has changed. The extremes that we see. And okay, I get it. You know, the Earth has gone through various other periods where extremes were present. Obviously, it's part of evolution. But if they tell me that when I'm driving my car, I am polluting the air and I'm responsible for people's ill health and for the warming up of the earth, then I'm asking them what that stuff is doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
What but you don't get any answers.
No, no. Well, people will disagree here on the water. With you, Derby 7, distilled sure. water will takes the distilled water will take toxins from your body while those toxins are being drawn out. You may feel a
good
little
point.
Unwell.
Good point. When you have a lot of waste products in your body and you put dead water in that body, any kind of water, but even dead water, distilled water, it will take on the energy of its environment. In this case, a toxic environment. So yes, it will help to remove the toxins. Yeah?
Yes.
Here is the problem. Here is the problem. Because this idea started about 15 years ago in America. it was you have to drink 3 liters of water a day.
Right.
Fine. Yeah? To remove the toxins. Good stuff. So I do that, and indeed, I feel a lot better. I have less headaches. My tummy is less bloated. I feel an awful lot better. I have a lot more energy. So I keep doing that, 3 liters of distilled water a day. Great stuff. Now I'm starting to feel a bit worse again. And what do? They go, well, maybe I'm not drinking enough. And they start with 4 liters a day.
Ah, right. So we're on the... We're on the grow again.
We're on the same level here.
Yes.
And what you do if you follow that line and you keep drinking massive amount of dead water, not just distilled water, dead water in general, you will start to remove nutrients from your body.
Right.
You will. So the first instance, you get better, and then you start becoming ill again. Now. I never use distilled water because the water is fine as it is. You know, I can do all sorts with it, and so they don't need to do anything with it, and then sell it to me at a massive price. When I want to remove toxins from my body, that's very simple. All I need to do is to give it some water and give it stimulation. So if you drink active water, and that may be active life through lots of different things, it may be because this water comes from deep in the earth's crust and brings, you know, minerals to the surface that we don't have in that quantity on the surface. Whatever it is, it may be just some lemon juice that I'll squeeze into my water. It may be some ginseng tea that I made, or some cinnamon tea or whatever, stimulating tea. And I drink that. If I drink a warm drink, that is already energizing. And I drink a drink with a life energy in it, that will stimulate my system to detoxify. I don't need distilled water for that.
Right. Incredible. Incredible. So, in essence, distilled water would be okay for a short period of time.
Yeah, you could do. But to me, it's why buy it? You know, water runs almost free from a tap, if you like.
Yes, yes.
So...
I think people have bought them, Patrick, because they're afraid of the tap water and fluoride and things like that.
And it's, I mean, okay, you know, here we're talking ingredients again. Oh, but they've added this to the tap water and they've added that to the tap water. Correct. Of course it's correct. Yes, of course it's correct. But you can change the energy of the water, one. Two, we don't actually need as much water as we think we do.
Interesting.
We don't need as much food as we think we do.
Yes, I can relate to the second one, but okay, that's fascinating. Well, believe it or not, we've been talking for an hour. It seems like 5 minutes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So what we'll do now is we'll have a little, just have a quick, as we call here, a wee break. Okay. If you want to go make yourself a cup of tea or do whatever you want to do.
Do something with the water.
Yes. I think I'm going to put some life in mine for a moment.
Okay.
Maybe I should pee in it. I don't know.
Very healthy.
Well, we'll talk about that in a moment, Patrick. That's another area I'd like to go as well.
Okay.
So there is another type of healer, and that's music. This is Healing from John Lee Hooker. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to People's Internet Radio, where we are seeking solutions. And my guest tonight is Dr. Patrick Quanton, MD, who quit the mainstream medicine to move into yoga. And I don't know if I'm saying this right, Patrick. Ayurvedic principles.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
So before, thanks. I'm glad I said it right. Just as a one-liner there at the end, I was saying about I should pee in my water. And you said that could be good. Now, there's also things about that as well, isn't there?
Yes, but the principle is very simple. First of all, we know there are plenty of studies and personal experiences that shows that drinking your own urine is beneficial to your health. The principle is very simple too. In your urine, you'll find the waste products from your system.
Yeah.
And so whatever your system, whichever part of your system is under a lot of pressure, that will alter the consistency and the content of your urine. Now, if you drink that, what you actually are doing is you are giving your system a homeopathic dosage, and the homeopathic principle of in order to cure a disease, you have to stimulate the body, you have to stimulate the system in the same way as the disease, and have the effect of the stimulation has to be the same as the disease itself, and then the body will actually recuperate. It will get rid of the disease itself. So here, by drinking your own urine, you're actually taking homeopathic medicine.
Okay, and how often would you have to do that?
That depends on what the problem is. I mean, some people do it on a daily basis. I don't know. I don't think that is necessary. But certainly when there are health problems, and particularly chronic health problems, then this would certainly be a good way of helping to detoxify and cleaning your body.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Mm. Okay. Well, Patrick, I know recently, well, actually, probably was a little while ago now, but I only seen the YouTube clip. You did a little thing on the UK column with my good friend Rob Ryder.
Oh, yes.
Basically, yeah. On vaccines. I know, yes. Rob is well up on vaccines. My daughter has not, her new child is, well, 20 months old now, but 21 months old, and she's in the chat room tonight. Hi, darling. She has decided not to vaccinate, and the child is very happy. And I just think he's so full of life. Your opinion on vaccinations?
Well, my opinion should really be everybody's opinion. I don't think, I think we have to be careful with opinions. Everybody's got an opinion.
Yes.
But it's not about opinions, and it's not about proving that you're right. It is actually trying to form an opinion based on all the information that is available. And that's the problem.
Right.
That's the problem, because people don't get told all the information. The information about vaccines lies in the history of vaccines itself. Now, when I say that to a group of people, a random group of people, and I ask them what the history of vaccination, give me a few pointers, then it's, well, vaccines, you know, they got rid of polio. Vaccines, they protect us from this disease, that disease. It helps to keep babies healthy and what have you. Well, yes, that's the history that people have been told.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that has nothing to do with the reality of the history of vaccinations. The history of vaccinations, all the way back to not even where modern vaccinations or the idea started with Louis Pasteur, all the way back to there, but even a century before that, all studies and all information that has been written up time and time and time again, right up to this moment, the whole history is littered with disasters.
Yeah.
There is not one independent study that will show a significant improvement or a significant effect, positive effect, from any kind of vaccination program that they have implemented. Not one.
Even
people go, oh, that's not true. I'm afraid it is. I'm afraid it is that bad.
Yeah.
You know, it is that bad that when Dr. Sark got his congressional medal from the hands of President Eisenhower.
Nice man.
Live on television. 10 days later, literally 10 days later, they had to stop the vaccination program in America because more children were dying through the vaccination program than before. And in 10 days' time, they already knew that.
Yeah. Incredible.
And then they start to fiddle. And I mean literally fiddle. They change a lot of things. They fiddle with statistics. They fiddle with name giving, you know, definitions as to what is actually poliomyelitis and what isn't. What other name do we give it? And they start producing all kinds of tricks to keep the whole process going. And what is the process? The process is a money-making machine.
Absolutely.
And it still stands. There is nothing more to be said. And I know it will angry a lot of people, but I'm telling you, if you want to have an opinion, then please look at all information that is available. When Dr. Wakefield, who was all in favor of vaccinations, came across time and time again, parents that told him and that showed him that their child was damaged and that they thought it was vaccinations, he wouldn't believe it. But in the end, he had to write a report that said, and it didn't say, his first report didn't say anything more than that. It said, shouldn't we look at this? Because this is more than a coincidence. And don't we want to know what is actually going on? And then all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Then it was all of a sudden, they were all over him. And well, the rest is history, as they say. And this has happened time and time and time again. People have been destroyed because of what they found. Their scientific studies have been destroyed, equipment has been destroyed, all to keep this fantasy, I can't call it anything else, alive. And the reason is very simple. The reason is that almost 200 years ago now, scientists proved, I'm not saying that they indicated or theorized, they proved that microorganisms, in other words, the bugs that cause our infections, that they did not come from outside.
Right.
But that they actually, they started to grow in certain conditions from within the tissues.
Right.
And what were the conditions? The conditions were tissue that was not healthy. Diseased tissue could, not all, but could potentially, could grow its variety of microorganisms. And what's more, they proved that if they left them to it, more often than not, these microorganisms would disappear after a short period of time, feeding on the debris of the diseased tissue. Once the debris was eaten and digested, these microorganisms would just disappear. In other words, no food, no animals. Wow. So to them, it was very obvious. We were not under any kind of threat from bacteria on the outside.
It's on the
disease comes first, the infection, the bacteria, the microorganisms, the bugs come later. They don't come from outside, they come from within the diseased tissue itself.
Right, so we can't pick nothing up then, Patrick?
You can't pick up the infection from the bacteria that surround you.
Okay.
You can pick things up. That's different.
Yeah.
That's different. Yeah. But not from just eating some bacteria. And in a way, once I came across that, I was so happy, because when I was a little boy, my mummy and daddy took me to the seaside. And in the afternoon, I got a biscuit.
Yep.
But very often I dropped that biscuit in the sand. And I just picked it up and ate it.
Carry on, yeah.
I should be dead. You know, I should be poisoned by so many bacteria, microorganisms. Nobody would be able to survive. It doesn't work like that at all. We know this. Scientists know this for almost 200 years. And in that time, from then to now, on regular intervals, various scientists coming from various angles to this point, all across the globe, from Australia, Austria, Norway, America, the UK, Italy, you know, scientists have found independently that this is true. Not only that the bacteria come from inside, that the disease comes first, and the bacteria, the microorganisms, are a result of the disease, not the cause of the disease.
I see.
But also that these bacteria are there as part of the defense system a living organism, living tissue, uses. And this scientific proven information does not enter the medical world at all.
Right. Right. Well, I've got one healthy grandson. I know that. He's mm-hmm. he's so happy, bright, very connected with nature.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful boy. And I've said this before. I've seen children in pushchairs, and for want of a better expression, they look stoned.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, the immune system, I believe, in the first 6 months, well, this is what I'm told, Patrick, and I'm talking to a doctor now, so I'll be careful what I say, that the immune system is so important not to be played with in the first 6 months of life.
Yeah, it's, I mean, to me, it is shocking. If I compare the prescribed protocols for vaccinations when I started in practice, if I compare what we did then to the number of different disease tissues that they get injected with today, one, and two, the period of time and the age of the babies in which these vaccinations, these immunizations occur, to me, in this short period of time, it is shocking. It is hallucinatory to just see, imagine how many different diseases these children are exposed to, and their immune system, which is still building and still growing, you know, and still finding its feet, is overrun by. No wonder that there are cases of babies and small children that don't make it.
No. Or are seriously
don't get
damaged.
Out of it. Seriously get damaged.
Yeah. Yeah, very seriously.
Now, one interesting point I want to make with this, it is one thing, because the anti-vaccination brigade, they're always lobbying about, you know, what goes inside a vaccine. And as the pharmaceutical industry changes that very often, it is an argument that you can never win because they're always a step ahead. But there's one important point that I want to give to your listeners. When you go back in the history of vaccinations, the whole point, the whole idea was that it is actually a homeopathic principle, but never mind that, they don't believe in homeopathy. the principle was that if we expose the baby to a very small amount of the said disease, then the immune system can build itself strongly against this tiny impulse that we're giving.
Yeah.
So the whole idea was to introduce the disease.
Yes. Right?
Very, very protectively and, you know, very carefully and so on. But that was the idea. Now, the difficulty was to actually get a clean preparation. In other words, get clean bacteria rather than bacteria that are covered in mud, yeah, in debris, and so on and so forth. Because the cleaner the bacteria, you could imagine, it's all theory, but you could imagine that the immune system would respond more specifically than if there was a lot of other stuff that went in with it, right?
Yeah.
It's logical. Now, the scientists did that. So they purified and they purified and they purified and they made it. They got pure, a pure sample, say. So the only thing they needed to do was just to inject these, let's just say for argument's sake, these few bacterias into the system, and that would be the perfect vaccination, right?
Yes.
So they did that, and they waited, and they tested, and they did it again, and they tested again, and they kept doing it. And what were the test results? No immune reaction whatsoever. Hmm. Nothing. And then one clever chappy said, I know what's missing. and he put a toxic element in with the bacteria, and boom, you had an immune response.
Incredible.
The truth is that no vaccine gives you an immune response. I don't care how they want to measure the immune response. They can do it whatever way they want. What creates the immune response is the toxicity that they put in with the vaccine, with in the preparation. And that toxicity can come from any kind of product. It can be a stabilizer, you know, or they can use aluminium or mercury or whatever. They need stabilizers. They need stuff to hold this together, hold the vaccine together. And it's that actually creates the response of the immune system. Now, if that's the case, then I go, no, thank you. No. If I want to stimulate my body with a toxic product, I'll have a whiskey. Thank you very much.
So stay well away from vaccines, Patrick.
Vaccines are there's no purpose to it except making money.
Yeah.
And scaring people to death.
Absolutely.
So it gives you no protection whatsoever. Yeah. And it adds certainly to the babies, but also to old people with their flu vaccines and so on and so forth, and diabetics with flu vaccines and other hepatitis vaccines and whatever they're doing now. It adds a lot of toxicity to your system.
And they queue and they queue and they queue.
Yeah. Because of fear.
Yes. It's all fear tactics.
It's because of fear.
Yeah.
And here is the thing, of course, because the whole fear is built around you can catch this and you can catch that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, okay, there's plenty of studies that show that you can't catch. Not that way, I said, not that way. We do catch things, or I should actually use a different word, and that is you can be influenced by certain things. You can be influenced by certain things.
Yeah.
And that is what is spreading through population. It's not viruses. It's not bacteria. It's a certain energy.
Yeah.
It's a certain energy.
like a placebo effect.
Yeah, it's if you say, for instance, right, just a simple example. You have an office, 10 people working in the office, same room, yeah, all secretaries, say, so doing sort of similar work and what have you. You enter the office in the morning, and there is one sitting there sneezing, coughing, spluttering. And it's, oh, my God, I hope I won't catch it. I hope I won't be ill. Right?
Yes.
Okay. What is, well, I've got a bit of the flu, but, you know, that's what it is. Okay. The next morning, out of those 10 people, 4, 5, or 6 people will be spluttering and coughing and sneezing. 3 days later, if there is one not spluttering and sneezing, you'll be lucky.
Yeah.
So, you see, it has spread from one person to the other to the other. Wait a minute. Common cold, that's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Common cold. Go and look in the medical books. The common cold, it says in the medical books, is caused by a virus. Right? Yeah. This virus has an incubation period of 10 days, 7 to 10 days. What does an incubation period mean? It means that between you catching the virus and it actually causing symptoms, 7 to 10 days will pass.
But they get the cold the next day.
If you put this conundrum to a doctor, he goes, oh, yes, but it will have caught the virus before the other person got symptoms.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. You tell me, also in the medical books, it says that the virus spreads through the water droplets that I cough out and that I sneeze out. This person only started sneezing today.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
There was no sneezing, no coughing, no spluttering the previous day. So where are these water droplets that are filled with all these viruses?
Yeah.
I haven't had 10 days time to build up my symptoms. No, that's not how it works. You picked up something else. You picked up something else. And if you catch it, if you catch that disease early, it is because you have fear.
Wow.
There are some studies, and the percentages change, but there's some studies that say that fear can lower your resistance up to 80%, 80%.
That's incredible.
That means that if you're fearful from something, you're already a goner.
Right?
It's the fear that kills you,
yeah.
Not the bacteria.
Wow. That's amazing.
What are you picking up? You're influenced by something.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody's spluttering or whatever. So this person has diseased tissue. In this instance, we say, okay, he's got diseased tissue in his throat and his sinuses, and okay, fine. Right. Now, that is an expression of something, right? Now, and this is where alternative therapy, or the thinking, the theory, the philosophy of alternative therapies, or at least the serious ones, the holistic ones, are completely opposite to the Western medical system. Science has proven, this time almost 100 years ago, has proven it. Before that, we knew it a long time ago, but 100 years ago, it has proven that all life, everything created, all mass, is energy.
Yeah.
So?
If the fear takes away your energy.
Yep. If the fear takes away your energy, that's that gone. The other thing is that the human being is not a physical body in essence. The human being is an energetic field with a body at the center. The energetic field is what makes the body, operates the body. The energetic field is what actually shows me how my tissues are. It produces my tissues and how they function. So the energy exchange between two people, or between a person and his or her environment, is what changes, what forms my body and changes it. So if these 10 people in this room, all secretaries, all working for the same boss, they are all having the same or similar stress at work. Whatever the thing is that at that moment is going on, if one person collapses under the strain, others will start to show symptoms that are very similar, and they collapse too. They're not catching a bug from that person. They're just catching his disease, in this case, his collapse.
Yeah.
He can no longer withstand the pressure, and then others start to identify with that.
Right.
Because they all are influenced by the same energy field. And then you have to look at the individuals as to who gets it the worst, who gets it the quickest, and who doesn't get it. That depends on the individual. You know, if you have people with similar interests, similar outlook on life, and so on, then they will show similar disease patterns.
Yes.
What started to fascinate me about disease was not the number of people that were killed by the Black Death, but what started fascinating me was the guy that survived. If I'm catching something from the outside, if we're drinking all the same buggered water, you know, why is this one surviving?
Yeah.
And this is where it took a wrong turn. The Western medical profession is all about getting to know diseases. Yeah? They take it to pieces. They scrub it clean. They dissect it. They want to know all about diseases. And what do they learn from that? They learn what it is and how you become, and what it is like to be diseased. They learn about diseases. If you study somebody who's healthy, you may learn something about health.
Ah. It's the mirror.
They don't
again.
Do that.
Everything is a mirror.
Yeah.
Everything. No
and
matter
they keep it that way.
Yes.
Because just suppose there was one drug or one operation or whatever, one treatment that would actually proven cure you from one particular disease. What would that mean? That would mean that disease would virtually not exist anymore. And if it started to raise its ugly head, you would go, there's the treatment, done, gone, finished. Right?
Yeah.
So suppose this treatment consists of a course of tablets. Well, once you've cured the disease, you're not going to sell any more tablets.
No. No.
That's finished.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Well, go home. No more business.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's all for money.
It is as simple as that.
Yes.
That is also the reason, not that the individual doctor, of course, thinks that way. He has no time to think anymore.
No.
That's not the point. But if we put it in that context, if you are told you have heart problems or blood pressure problems, and you have to, this is always the beauty of people that want to help you, you have to take tablets to lower your blood pressure, and then after some time, sometimes a week, sometimes later, it doesn't matter, you come out and you go, oh, I now have erection problems. And they go, oh, yeah, you can have that with those tablets. But tell you what, keep taking the tablets and we'll give you some hormones.
Yeah.
If you say, oh, now I've developed a stomach ulcer, they go, yep, that may be from the tablets. But you need the tablets, so keep taking the tablets and we'll give you some Gaviscon or whatever. Yeah. So, in other words, if you take the information that goes with your medication, you'll find that given time, you'll get side effects that I mentioned there.
My favorite word, side effects. Yeah. I love that.
They're not side effects.
No, they're
effects. Ordinary effects. They know about them.
Yes.
They've written it up for you.
Yes.
No doctor is allowed to. Yeah? No doctor is allowed to then go, oh dear, that's not good. We're making you ill. Guess what? Stop taking those tablets. Mm. I think you're better off having a little bit of a high blood pressure. That will do you less harm than buggering up your kidneys.
Yeah.
No. Carry on. And that way you basically have a license to poison people.
For sure. And they just keep building up and building up.
Keep building it up.
Yeah.
And whatever new symptom comes in, and if you dare to ask, could it have something to do with the tablets? Nah.
No.
But it's on the list.
Yeah.
Yes, but you don't need to read that. That almost never happens. Why not? Because no doctor wants to recognize that it happens.
Yeah.
That's a big problem.
Yes, yes. And as I was saying earlier, Patrick, about the tablets I take, I need to, obviously, you need a reasonable consultation to work out how I would have to get off those tablets.
Yes, it would actually need, I mean, depending on how many different types of tablets people are taking and so on and so forth, it needs planning. And this is not a problem. There are quite a number of, let's call them just holistic therapists out there that know that people should come off their tablets. But they don't know about the tablets.
Right.
So therefore, they can't really, and here and there is one that will do it, but most of them don't want to advise you on how to come off the tablets.
Mm.
So they know it has to happen, but because they say, well, not qualified to say anything about that or to, and yeah. Then it's go to your doctor and ask him to reduce this or that.
Mm.
You won't get very far with that.
No, no. Although I do find my painkillers being, I'm allowed up to 8 a day, and mm-hmm. this is going slightly off topic now,
no,
but
no.
I'm allowed 8 tablets a day. I usually take 6 but a day. Sometimes I have to just take a couple, just because, not because I'm in pain, but because I have such bad withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
But I can take up, but if I do have a day where I've done a lot of physical work, then I ache a lot. Then I'll find I have to take 8. But my doctor's now decided that he's going to cut me back to 6 a day. He never even told me. So I got to the end of last month and I was thinking, why am I low on my tablets?
God.
And he cut them back and never even said to me. I'm just wondering now if there's a shortage around the corner.
Well,
there's going to be no tablets.
The other thing, there is a shortage for certain in the production of certain tablets. That's true at the moment. But the other thing, of course, is that you're allowed a month's prescription, 30 days prescription, aren't you?
Yes, 28 days.
Or 28 days on one prescription.
Yeah.
Well, if your prescription only lasts you 20 days, you will need to have another one before your 28 days are up, which means if you stretch that out over a year, you can write a few extra prescriptions.
I see. And some more extra cash.
Extra income, yeah.
Oh, bloody hell. Goodness gracious me. I've got a question. I hope we're going. I'm going to do this question, Patrick, and then if there's anywhere you want to go in particular, we will, because I do want to advertise your website and the marvelous stuff you've got there. I'm going to pop it in the chat box again. Activehealthcare.co.uk.
That's it, yes.
Yeah. I advise everyone to go and have a look at that. It's some fascinating stuff there. I've got a question. Lee, does Patrick have any comments on negative ions and if he is aware of this in relation to energy and regeneration?
I get hung up about the word negative.
Right. I can see why now at this interview, yeah.
Look, these are details, right? Everything that is in creation is there for a reason. It helps to balance. We need negatives, we need positives.
Yeah, we need the balance.
We need everything. It is up to us not to disturb that balance too much and to find our own balance within that. So I, over the years, I've done all this stuff, you know, going into details and minerals and supplements and then this water and that. But ultimately I now try to stay away from all those details, and I don't believe that if you change a detail in life and you hold on to that, that will actually improve your health long term. Improve your balance is better than improve your health. Improve your balance. From the moment you get obsessive about something, I think you're on the wrong track.
Yeah.
You can have give a simpler example, right? You can have in your mind what you believe to be the right There's that word right and wrong again, but the right food for you.
Yes.
Right?
You follow
you
your
can
heart.
Believe that.
Yeah.
From the moment you get obsessive about it and you panic because you're somewhere and you can't get exactly what you want or what you need, you're on the wrong track.
Yeah.
No detail, no one-off thing is going to destroy your health forever, just like that.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
I can promise you that even if you get completely pissed out of your brain, you will not damage your health permanently. You will not get liver cirrhosis
No.
just because you drank too much one evening.
No, of course.
Yeah, you may not feel well for a while. Okay, but given time, give your system the chance to rebalance and it will come back.
Right.
So it's the same with food, it's the same with exercise, it's the same with medication, it's the same with everything. It's about allowing your system to change.
Right.
This is the thing. Everything changes all the time. The food that we eat in the summer should not be the same from the winter. Why? Because the circumstances in which you live and therefore the influences that you live under are different.
Yeah.
So your system will need a different kind of support. You need to drink more when you're sweating a lot.
Yeah, it's
you
obvious,
drink
isn't it?
Less when you're not sweating. Yeah. So the point is, if you want to live a balanced life, be aware of the fact that balance or that balance point will shift continuously.
Yes.
And therefore, if you want to be in balance and remain in balance, it is essential that you allow yourself freedom of movement.
Right.
Change your mind on things just because of the moment.
Yeah.
Don't get obsessive about anything, irons or otherwise.
Okay. Brilliant answer. Thank you. Patrick, is there anywhere you want? We've got about 5 minutes left. Is there anywhere you want to go particularly? I'll ask that. Is there anywhere you want to go particularly? Because I want to ask you about ear candling.
Because it's on the website.
Because it's on the website, and because I don't.
And because it's a crazy thing to do.
Well, I've not looked at it in any way, Patrick. I've not had the time, unfortunately. No. But I get terrible tinnitus.
Yep.
I would love to remove that, and I've got a lot of friends in the music industry, of course, where we love our noise.
Yeah.
If it's not loud, yeah. I can't do the gig. But okay. I do get.
Let's do tinnitus.
Yes, please.
Just briefly. The tinnitus is an overstimulation of the nerve endings.
Overstimulation.
The nerve endings don't do anything wrong. They're just overstimulated. And an overstimulation in the nervous system translates as too much pressure. Too much pressure in the nervous system. That can be all over your system, but it can also be locally, like, for instance, in your ear. Or it can be just one ear and not the other. So there is an overpressure on the nervous system in your ear. That is what causes tinnitus. So it's not a disease. It's nothing obscure, just overpressure. Now, there is there's two things that are important. One is to get a better balance, a better flow of energy. One is try and remove the obstacle that is holding the energy, allowing the energy to build up. And two is to ensure that there is enough energy distributed throughout the system. Now, removing the obstacle when we have tinnitus, then there is too much pressure in the area behind the ear, underneath the ear, and in front of the ear.
Okay.
There is too much pressure, and you can feel that pressure. Very often you can feel that pressure in the muscles in that area. It's hard. It feels hard.
Yeah.
So by pressing on those hard bits, you get, it's another homeopathic impulse. By there is already too much pressure. Put some more pressure on it. When you remove your finger, when you remove the outside pressure, your system from inside will release some of that pressure. And gradually, you open up those channels. So that is where the problem is. It's not always that easy to remove that extra pressure, because that very often relates to pressure in the neck and the shoulders. But that is where the problem is. Ear candling doesn't work on a physical basis. Everything that you read on other websites about explanation of ear candling is complete rubbish. The ear candling is also an energetic tool. And what it does is it hands out heat to your system. And your nervous system actually picks up that heat very quickly. So by introducing ear candling to the system, you may equalize the energy flow between in the ears and from the ears down into the neck and the rest of the body. So it adds energy to your system, and that energy will be used, or a lot of that energy will be used by your system to heal, not just ear problems, but also throat and lung problems, immunity problems too. So ear candling can do an awful lot with that. One word of warning, particularly because we're talking about tinnitus. If you have a serious blockage in your neck or behind your ear and you do ear candling, then your ear might become very hot.
Yeah.
Very hot.
Right.
Ear candling gives you a nice, warm, soothing feeling. But if it becomes hot, you have to stop ear candling immediately, because that means that the extra energy that the ear candling is delivering can't flow away. And so you're actually burning, yeah, that part of your system, in this case your ear.
So are you talking about massaging the earring?
Massage the ear, around the ear, the area around behind, underneath, and in front of the ear, by putting pressure on it with your thumb or your finger.
I'll get the wife to do that.
Oh, really? You're too lazy to do it yourself, aren't you?
No, I just thought it would be a better way.
Yeah, yeah. For whom? You for her.
Patrick, we are right out of time. I don't know. I want 3 hours, Vin. I don't know where that 2 hours went. It was incredible. I feel like I've hardly started. Patrick, would you come back again?
Anytime.
Oh, it's been absolutely marvelous.
It's been great. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick Quanton, MD. Active Health is where you'll find his activehealth.co.uk is where you'll
Active
find
Active Healthcare.
Active Health Care, I beg your pardon. Activehealthcare.co.uk is where you'll find all the information. Patrick Quanton, thank you so much, and we do hope you'll come back and join us soon.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, that's it. There's 35 seconds on the clock, so at least I'm not going to run to Joanne's time this tonight. The Amash files are up next. She did tell me it's to do with ET. Where are you, Joanne? Ray Handia from the newly formed Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation, the research into extraterrestrial encounters, a new body set up to research consciousness and ET. That's Joanne, and she's up next, and I'm off because I've got 8 seconds to go. God bless you, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for being in the chat room. It's been a pleasure. Good night. God bless.